Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And it's the midweek chat version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles, thread, and ground cloth.
Yeah.
And wire.
And things.
And scissors. And and don't run with scissors.
So I'll tell you something funny. So, yeah, because that went kind of nowhere.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm doing the thing. I'm building the stash and the projects, right? I was walking through a craft store because I had to for something else. And I was walking by and they had these little like sort of silvery ornament frames, right? And or I guess they could be, you know, frames for anything else. And they're just squares and they had like a little initial on the bottom. And so the opening is maybe 2 inches by 2 inches. And of course I looked at that and said, this is the perfect little ornament frame. So I could make them, you know, personalized or do like a little, you know, design in each one and have them for people with their initial. And they were like a dollar. Mm-hmm. So I swiped up, you know, a bunch of those. And then, so then I went through this whole thing of, oh, I can stitch the Mary Corbett trees, but Mary Corbett trees are like 4 inches. So to scale them down, I would have had to, they didn't scale well, right? I would have had to redesign them. So I didn't want to do that. So I just popped onto Pinterest just for fun, just to find Christmas designs. And I found these little mice. And so, okay, so great. That's fine. And the only cloth that I had, like I didn't have, I could have done this on Aida cloth. I could have done it on anything. It's counted cross stitch. The only thing I had, was something that I must have purchased very early in this whole process of me learning, and didn't label it. And I have no idea what it was. Okay.
Okay.
So
there we go.
It's not needlepoint. Yeah. Right. Right. So this is where Christine's not that smart. Right. So, it appears to be linen, and it is, it's a woven, you know, obviously it's probably a, I don't know. I should measure the thread count. I didn't do that. I just kind of guessed.
Nah, live on the edge. Just live on the edge.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I was figuring. Like I had it and I was at somebody's house, so I didn't really have anything else to, you know, let me grab something else or whatever. This is what I had. So it was either stitch on this or not. And the thing was, like regular, like Aida cloth or something like that, if you're doing counted cross stitch, the hole between the threads is pretty distinct. So you can see very well.
Right.
This cloth, now I could have bought this for embroidery. I don't know. Right. So I really don't know. It has the feel of linen, right? It's sort of the hand of linen. But for all I know, it could be just a woven for like quilting or something, because I am struggling to find the holes between the threads, and not every thread is even. So that's one of the things we've talked about is even weave,
right,
where the threads, if you get a finer linen, all of the threads are exactly the same width. So you get really nice even threads. And so that's why you want to invest in a good piece of ground cloth. This was the opposite of that. Okay. So I could barely see the holes between the threads because there really wasn't any holes between the threads. It was like stitching on denim practically, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the threads were all wonky. Like they all didn't have the same width. So I said, well, this is what I have. So I'm going to stitch on it because this is what I had. And, you know, quite frankly, this is how people used to do this. This is, you have a scrap of fabric, you stitch on it because that's what you have. So this was my challenge to myself, was it's a little ornament. And if it comes out terrible, what have I invested? A little bit of time. And I've learned that I should never do that again. Right.
Right.
So what I have learned is, so I decided to stitch it over two, which I've never done before. Most of the work I've done is over one. But I figured if I do it over two, at least I can average out the thread wonkiness.
Average. Now, see, wonky is my favorite term. My favorite stitching term is wonky. Now we're averaging the wonkiness. Okay.
Right. See, the mean wonky factor.
There it is, right there. The MWF. Even. The MWF.
Yes,
there we have
it.
Okay.
The MWF was a little bit more even across the piece because you're dealing with two threads instead of one. So. Anyway, so the end result of this, because I guessed on the stitch, I could have just counted the stitches on the pattern and then counted the stitches with a ruler, you know, and figured out how big the piece was going to be. But I said, let's just stitch it. So it's probably going to be a little too big for the thing that I wanted it for. So, lesson learned, if you're going to invest a bit of time, and I mean, really, what was it? It was a couple of hours. It was not really that big of a deal. Other lessons learned, you can find fun things on Pinterest if you're looking for tiny little projects to keep yourself busy. Also, when you buy a piece of fabric, label it because you don't remember like you, that you,
yeah.
As a scientist. And this is, you know, this is when we all have these sort of, things where we're one way at work and we're another way at home. Yep. So at work, my entire sort of reason for being is if you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So documentation is everything. And I'm even more fastidious about that than most, right? Because of the way that I was trained.
Right.
So
and as a scientist, label your test tubes. Yeah.
Everything.
Fundamentals.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's not like you don't even have like, but you barely don't have a pen that isn't labeled, right?
Right.
So
right.
Everything is labeled. So I need to bring that sort of rigor into my stitching, supplies. So my threads, I will tell you, are labeled to within an inch of their life. Everyone is in a bag. Each one has an index card in it that has what fiber it is, what make it is, and the thread number. So I've done a good job there. But yeah, I've discovered that I need to do the same thing with the fabric. So, because now I'm like, I don't know what this, I mean, it could be good for,
yeah,
lots of things. I don't know what it is, but I guess that's kind of cool because I'm kind of experimenting on it.
Right.
And well, I don't know.
Sounds like a nice tight piece of linen that with some sharp needles, you could do some surface embroidery on.
And I think that's how it's going to be. It's going to be much better used that way.
Yeah.
So, but it was kind of it was a little bit of a, let me see if I can actually do cross stitch on this. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of that element to it too, because it looked impossible. So, and it looked like a really bad idea. So, and my coworkers will tell you that I have a little bit of a reputation of being the person that looks like a terrible idea. When are we doing it? So,
yeah. Yeah. Let's just have the adventure. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about the experience. So I figured I have nothing to lose. So let me try this. So yeah. So that's what I learned. Label your fabrics.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
That's my lesson. So I'll have to put pictures of it. And so it's obvious. I mean, the stitching is not precise at all because like I said, the mean wonky factor is all over the place. So some of the stitches are wider than others, and sometimes you could compensate and sometimes not. So it is not my best cross stitch by far. It is really kind of the kind of piece you'd want to give to somebody that doesn't know anything about stitching, mm-hmm. because they would look at it and say, wow, this is so cute, and never look at the stitches.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, but I'll post a picture of it because I have no shame, and you know, it's not always about posting. Well, but it's not always about posting. This is my best work. You know, I think there's something instructive about, you know, here's something I did that came out pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But I kind of know why.
Yeah. Learn from it. Yep.
Or you know what? I really didn't put much effort into this, and look, you can see that it showed. You know, all of
Yeah,
that stuff.
there it is right there. Zero effort in, zero results.
I was watching The Crown. It got really interesting. You know, I missed some stitches, and you know, there it is. That's how it is.
Yep. And we have a new term, the mean wonky factor.
The mean wonky factor.
I like that. I like that. All right. It's written down here in the official
Good.
glossary. Show note glossary, mean wonky factor. Yes. So along those lines, what is it? What is it? 10,000 hours at something to be an expert? Is that what it is? I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
10,000 hours to be an expert. Well, I'm a far cry from that, I guarantee you. But I always think, as I'm going through, all right, if you had any idea how many hours you put into stitching, how close are you to 10,000 hours, and do you feel like an expert at any juncture along the way? And then what are the little things that you learn as you're working through the 10,000 hours, even though you're not tracking them? What are the little things that you learn that make you better? You know what I mean? That you pick up
Yes.
just because you of constantly doing stitching, what are the things that you pick up that you carry on to the next project and the one after that? And so
Right.
I think I mentioned last week I'm working on the Anasazi song, and the first thing is to make two concentric stars with krinic cross stitch over one. Okay, I got those done. It was
Yeah.
painful. It was painful. But as I'm going, at first I'm stitching it normally, a way knot, stitch over that, and then when I get to the end of that thread, weave it under. And weaving it under krinic over one, what I think I had to go down, I think I said last week, down two sizes of needles just to have a fighting chance to get it
Yes.
under the thread. Okay, so all right, so I do several lengths of that. And then the mind's saying, wait a minute, you're an idiot. You need to figure out a better way. And of course, the pros in the needlework world are just rolling their eyes right now, but that's okay. Okay, you need to figure out a better way so you're not doing, trying to cram needles under krinic thread, because it really doesn't work. It's just difficult. So and then of course krinic thread coming off those spools, we all know how spiraled it is. And I don't have the little iron like you have. I have yet to purchase that. So all right, so item number one that I learned and tried, and it did work to some degree, is what I took was I cut lengths of krinic, tied the knot for the away knot in it, put a needle on it, and then up in the upper corner of my canvas, away from everything, I just put the thread through the canvas so it would hang from the away knot, or what will be the away knot, and left the needle on, and that was enough weight to pull the thread down. And I was surprised. I tried it just for entertainment purposes, and by the time I was ready for that length of thread, I was surprised at how much of the spiral had gone away. And just hanging there. And of course, then I didn't have to rethread a thread or anything. I already had them made up. So then that just became a regular practice for me.
And it didn't get tangled because I find when I do things like that I end up with a big giant tangled mess of things.
Oh no, it was far enough away from where I was actually stitching that and hanging straight down. So there was no way it was going to get tangled in what I was doing. And I could have done it somewhere else, but I had the hole right there to hold the knot, so it was easy. But yeah, that helped. And of course, you have described before how the little hair curler iron thing works so well on that. But
Flat iron.
flat iron, yes. But didn't have one, and this helped a lot. So when I was stitching with those, it was not as spiral curly and prone to knotting. So that was, it was a nice little plus. And on non-krinic threads that have, I'm starting to think I could hang those upside down like that and probably help out. So that was kind of a neat thing. And then, all right, now I got to get away from trying to cram a needle under krinic X's.
Well, Before you
Oh,
go,
okay.
I also want to wonder,
Before I go, I'm not going anywhere.
if something like Threadheaven would have made a difference. Because
Didn't think of
basically, and
that.
even if you don't want to use it on the whole thread, if you just use it on the end there, all you're trying to do really is kind of give it a little bit of slip so that it'll glide under the back
Right,
threads, right? So
right.
if you were to even take that and sort of rub that part of the thread on some Threadheaven and then use it that way. Do you think that would be helpful?
Well, I have it. I'll try it next time. That's worth a try. No harm in it. Yeah. Okay, there's an idea. Yep. So that was that was one thing I tried. Now you got my wheel spinning about Thread Heaven. Okay, I'll give that a try. And then I thought, we can't do this weaving under. So and I should have done this from the beginning. So when I would get done so that there was a decent length of thread, you obviously you can do an away knot of some kind. But I'm always concerned that and then stitch over the end of it with the new one. And so I'm always concerned though that it's not going to get tight and it's going to get all tangled in the back. But I said, this is a whole lot easier than spending 10 minutes and I stabbed myself with the eye end of the needle a couple of times trying to get it under the krynek. So I did. I just pulled the end through and really wove it, made a right angle on the canvas and wove it in and out. And then the first two or three times I stitched over that, then I just grabbed that end and pulled it so it would be tight. And then I just kept going like that. So it was an away knot, and then the end of it would I would make a long thing and weave it under open canvas or weave it through open canvas. And so that what that did was that allowed me to not have to keep moving along without having to cram it, try and tie off or end off a thread by weaving it under previous stitches. And so then the only time I had to do that then was the last one, the last piece. There was no place to weave it under. So that, it was just a little thing. And yeah, I probably should have thought of that at the beginning, but I didn't. So.
Okay, I have another question then. So this may be another, that's a terrible idea, or that's a good idea. With the krynek ribbons, particularly, I find that they're really tightly woven. So something like a silk ribbon or an organza ribbon where they're kind of sort of flimsy and light, you could stitch through it and you would feel like if there was any tension on the stitch that you put through it, it would tear. But the krynek, you could stitch through those and it's going to hold. You know what I'm saying? So to end a thread, could you not bring the thread that the krynek ribbon over to somewhere, wherever you're going, and then hold it, maybe pin it or however you're going to do, and then stitch up and through it once or twice to pin it down, basically to tack it. Instead of weaving it under, you're tacking it down somewhere else using the next thread you're going to use.
Yeah, if it were a ribbon, yeah, that would be, I would think that would be an option. Yeah. But this was the round braid.
It was the
So, yeah.
rounder.
Yeah, so that, but that's interesting. Yeah. That might be an option too. So,
A lot easier. Yeah,
yeah.
because I think it would probably lie just as flat. In
Right.
fact, what you could do is you could self-tack it. You could actually tack through itself,
Yeah.
So you come up through the thread and then you just go right back through itself once and then you're done, pretty much.
Yeah, it should hold, yeah. And of course,
Right, 'cause
yeah, and of course, people would suggest, well, why didn't you just pull it over the side and then stitch it down with whatever is going to be adjacent to those X's? And normally that would be an option, but it was all satin stitch over four that
Yeah,
or
and you would
it,
have seen it.
so it, it well, and it won't hold. There's nothing to hold it, so. That just wasn't an option, so this worked out. But yeah, with ribbon, I bet you could get away with that. But yeah, it was just a little a fun mental exercise on how to make krynek, which I think is an essential part of most designs because of what it adds dimension wise. But make it less hassle because it a ton of pluses, but there's some stitching hassle with it. And so, yeah, I learned something there along my way to 10,000 hours, which I'm probably 2,000 into, maybe, possibly. Yeah. And then another thing I learned, and this, you know, this is dumb guy stuff here. Read all the instructions for a stitching thing before you start. All of them.
What did you do?
Okay, so I we're using watercolors, overdyed thread, three strand, pull the strand out.
Karen.
Karen, yeah. And so now, usually whenever I get watercolors, I open it up to the big hoop that it is, mm-hmm. and then I cut the hoop. You know, I untie the ends where, and then I just cut it. And those are usually, and then those lengths, you know, the big circle of stuff, those lengths, then I cut in half, and that's what I stitch with. That's kind of how I do it. So I don't have really long things, and it's just automatic. So I get this thing, and I open up the skein, and without thinking, I cut it, because that's the way I always do it. And then I go to read how I'm going to stitch they're elongated cross stitches. They're not satin stitches, but they're over four, you know, up four and over one. And the instructions say for each side, each segment of these, in between these concentric stars, use a 48 inch length of Karen watercolor
thread. Mm-hmm.
Oops.
Yeah.
I already cut it. And the length is 33 inches. 33 or 30, yeah, somewhere in there, 33 or 36 inches. Oh boy, this is going to be fun. And my first thought was, all right, I'm just waiting. This was Sunday. I'm just waiting till Monday. I'm going to go get a new skein and do it right. And I thought, nah, you're better than that. We're not doing that game. So then I stitched and to see how far a length would go. And of course, it didn't go all the way because I needed 48 inches. And so I stopped, and then so now it becomes a game of take another length of the watercolors and find where the matching color is, so you know, so you can pick up, so right. you can stitch,
so you don't
and pick
have
up,
a jump.
Yeah, and oh have the God. Continuation, yeah, and judge how fast you want to run out of that color to get to the next one, which is kind of a fun mental challenge anyway. But the end result is that you have lots of little leftover 6-inch pieces that are pretty much useless, but I made it work. So, yeah.
I think there's mental challenges, and then there's mental challenges like that. That's pretty much like my mental challenge of, you know, can I stitch this mouse on a completely not appropriate piece of fabric that right. is going to yield a result that I already know is going to be less than optimal,
right?
Because of the quality of the fabric.
Yep.
And then as I'm doing it, you know, I'm thinking, I why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Because sometimes it's just fun to take a run at it and see what happens.
It is. And if it's small and if it's not a big deal, then, you know, and maybe part of it is too, is to see, all right, how much of an effect is that ground cloth going to have?
Right.
You know? And the answer is a lot.
Yeah, but fun to, it's just fun to learn. And you sit back and think,
that just
looks like garbage. And then you throw it in the garbage, you know, and what are you out? A little scrap of cloth and some thread. So what?
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, you pick up something, yeah.
Right. No, Failure is an option. That is okay, you know. And it's funny, I was talking to somebody about that recently, and – you know, the idea is failure is an option. And then you always, you know, people who say that tend to then follow that up with, you know, there's always a lesson, or they want to turn the failure it's really a secret success because you've learned something, or, you know, no, you know what? Sometimes that's good. Sometimes you do learn something, and other times it's just, nope.
Yep.
That didn't work.
Yep.
That looks terrible. That
Move
was
on.
Just a bad idea.
Yep.
And that's okay. You know, there's lots of really bad ideas. And the faster you get through those bad ideas, the sooner you can, you know, filter them out and stick to the good ones.
Yep. Yep. No, that's the cool thing about hobbies like this. You can just say, hey, I'm just going to take a flyer on this. Just going to see what happens.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so what? it didn't work. So what? Oh, wait a minute. This worked, but you know, if I had this and had this, it could be really cool. All right, go get that and that and put it together and make something. It matters. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hey, and then you mentioned Mary Corbett's trees. That's with one T.
Yes.
Trees and Corbett, both with one T. So, okay, so I was going to do a stitch a tree. Well, first effort is the biggest hurdle for embroidery for me is transferring the design to the linen.
Well, let me tell you, I was doing it on this other stupid linen too. So,
okay.
I will also mention that transferring it onto linen that is way too thick to be able to see through.
Mm.
Not so good.
Not so good. Okay. Another thing learned.
No.
Yep. So, okay. So I went and bought a number 5 pencil. Hard number 5 pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could have a nice thin line. I'm not a big fan of putting pencil on canvas, but hey, you know, cheap way to do it. I'm playing with this stuff anyway. So,
right.
So I went and got that. And then I don't have a light box. All right.
Yes.
So, all right. I can try it on the window. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's the technique is hold it up to the window. Well, I have to say that just was not going to work for me. All right. So,
which let's interrupt because the right way to do this would have been like a prick and pounce method. That would have been fine.
Yes.
It would have worked really well.
Yes.
Neither of us did that.
Correct.
Exactly. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So then, all right. What's the infrastructure solution? Well, obviously a light box. Okay. So, all right. Who would be able to tell me about the best light box to have? Mary Corbett. Go to her website, and of course, I think it was like 3 years ago, she reviewed a light box that she was a big fan of, and okay, that looks great. Hobby Lobby, do you have this light box on the website? Sure they do, and I happen to have, you know, it's Christmas time, I happen to have a 40% off Hobby Lobby one item regular price.
Awesome.
I should be able to get this light box for, you know, $15. Well, no, the light box sells for $110. That she recommends on the Hobby Lobby. And so 40% off, you know, I'm in the $75 range with tax.
Right. But so suddenly these tiny little trees that were going to be one off from scraps.
Right. No, that's not happening. That's just, you know, way, 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 way too much money. Okay. What does the Amazon people have for light boxes? Turns out a lot has happened since Mary reviewed that light box. And I got a light box, which is really just a light plate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no thicker than a mini USB plug. It's just thick enough that you can have a USB, a mini USB plug go into it. It's flat, glass surface with ruler markings on it that I got for $25.
Nice.
And, is it beautiful. And it dims, you know, it can dim it or whatever. But so last night, it came yesterday, and so last night I sat down and took just a scrap of linen and tried drawing with pencil on the linen through the light box, light plate, and by golly, that was pretty slick.
Yeah.
So for $25, so I thought, you know, hey, that's okay, because then I don't have to have a sunny day on the window and tape it to the window and everything. And so I thought I did okay on that one. So now... Now I have the sewing machine, which we talk about Sunday when we talk with Amy Poor. We talk about my sewing machine, but I bought a sewing machine. So now I can edge the cloth. I'm fully independent now. I don't have to impose on friends to edge cloth. And I have a light table so I can transfer designs. And so, yeah, I'm feeling pretty powerful here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I think with the Mary, what I learned, so I had that scrap of fabric, so I was determined to use it for everything.
Just beat the crap out of it. Use it for everything.
Yeah, because I have it now, so now I have to use it. And I am one of those people that will, that I don't like throwing things away. So it's going to get used for something. And you're right, it should be surface embroidery, but I should actually mark it properly. And I just didn't have the right tools, but I was being stubborn and all these things. So the fabric itself, the linen is really thick. So it was hard to see through what I was doing. So what I ended up doing was just sort of marking the landmarks of the trees onto what I was working on, and then doing a little bit of guesswork, which was also fine. That wasn't a problem. But that said, when I did have the opportunity to walk away from that fabric, I just grabbed like regular, I can't even think of the name of the kind of just regular tight woven white fabric. Not a muslin. Is a little bit thinner and usually, it could be bleached. But there is a name for the fabric and it is escaping me, but it's just basic, quilting cloth, like plain solid quilting cloth.
Okay. Yeah.
That I cannot think of, but you could do it on silk. I have some scraps of silk sitting around, anything that you can see through to be able to trace. That's really the key. Or do the prick and pounce method, and then you don't have to see through it at all. And because I think actually some of the trees would be really pretty done on like a navy blue fabric with a silver thread.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing so, that's the thing. I kind of went through my stash and I pulled some of the greens because they're mostly done in, you know, pretty traditional colors. But then I also pulled a couple of purple and silver combinations, and then like some deep red colors with other kinds of greens to try to play around with the colorways a little bit.
Yeah.
But doing a metallic on a dark fabric, I think it'd be really pretty.
Well, if you look, Mary Cortman posted in the last couple of days, she was working on one of those trees and wanted snow on the branches, and it was one of the tree designs was
straight.
Yes,
I saw that.
You saw that with the beads. She used beads.
Yep.
I thought that was a pretty neat idea. And then, of course, the question is, she did it on white, so the beads don't stand out. So then, the colors you were mentioning would be very good for that. Yeah.
Well, think about like just a plain, flat, navy fabric. And if you stitched, like, especially some of the trees that were just the swirls or something, done in a silver krynek braid.
Yep.
So not the ribbon, but the braid. Right. That would be so pretty.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And sparkly. And then you could throw a couple of beads on there. That would be really nice.
I like that idea. That's what, as I've thought about and getting ready to do one of these trees, that's one of the cool things about her tree designs. They're small, and several of them are, you know, just straight lines, you know, trunk and branches.
Yeah.
And so, so you can easily monkey around with all kinds of threads.
Yes.
For different effects. Yeah. You could, you know, silver tinsel tree, any number of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Put a little ornament at the top, ornaments on the, all kinds of things you can do with them. I really like the series. It's a neat idea. Yep.
And so they're scaled to 4 inches, and so I'm kind of adapting. So I'm like willing them. I'm gonna make them fit, because the other thing I found were these little 3-inch diameter wooden embroidery hoops that are terrible for embroidery. You get no tension. But what they're really nice for is displaying things. So you can do embroidery or do whatever, cross stitch, anything, and then use those as your final display, right?
Right.
You put it.
Right.
So I can imagine taking the whatever it is, the tree or the cross stitch pattern, and then putting it on a dark background fabric, popping it into the hoop, tightening it down really, really tight, and then trimming the back so that you don't have any leftover fabric there. And then done, ribbon and hang it up, and it's really nice. So I had these 3-inch hoops because they felt like they were more ornament size to me. So what I'm kind of feeling around with the trees is some of the stitches don't scale. And what I mean by that is when you try to do the stitches tinier, it doesn't look right. So some of them, like a chain stitch, that's gonna move easily. You just use a one strand instead of two. That's an easy scale issue. The one that I had, I started and I said, this is not gonna work out. Was there's one tree that just has it just sort of weaves back and forth, and it's this beautiful I forget the name of the stitch, but it's it almost ends up being a woven stitch. It kind of, it reminds me of knitting actually, because it winds back and forth in on itself. But trying to do that with two threads, it just wasn't happening. So that one I'm definitely going to have to muscle into submission to make it work. But the other ones, yeah, just using one strand instead of two, totally scalable. So I just had my handy computer savvy person that lives with me just print everything at 0.75%, no, at 75% scale. And voila, everything fits perfectly in those tiny little frames. So
there we go.
Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, fun stuff she's created here. Yep.
Nice. Yeah, it is fun because you get to kind of do whatever you want with them a little bit, right. You know?
Right. Yeah, and you immediately see the experimental options. And
yes.
And again, you're out, what, the trees are 3 inches tall, so you're out, what, a 6-inch piece of linen and, you know, a few lengths of thread and, yeah, a few hours
and
a piece
of time.
Yep.
That's it, you know?
Yep. Take them with you, sit in the doctor's office, sit in the car, mm-hmm. and just bang out a tree there. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, it's just a fun little thing. I think it's a great idea she's done.
Yeah,
yep,
that it is. I think so. Those are the, I think now my quite criteria for good designs are things that are made exactly the way that you would never want to touch them because they're so perfect. And then other things that just lend themselves to being adapted a million different ways because, you know, you can twist them any way you want to, and they're still going to be beautiful.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Oh, we're running out of time already.
We are.
I hate that. Oh, Pamela, don't know your last name, but Pamela, who asked about the chart that Christine got at Stitchery Row. It's a Victorian Christmas is what it's called.
I think something like that. Yeah, I'll have to look it up. But you could call Stitchery Row and just ask for it. It's pretty easy to find.
They know the one we talked about. So just say the one Christine and Gary talked about, and then they'll know it.
Yep.
Yeah. So there you go, Pamela. It's about as exact as we're going to get at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Most people would have the designer name and the actual thing, and yeah, but no.
The designer's name is Thea. I don't remember the name of the company, but her name is Thea.
Okay, there we go.
I know for sure.
More information. Okay, mm-hmm. Pamela. Or just call Stitchery Row and say, hey, the one that Christine bought, I want it. Yeah, they'll get it. So, okay. I think that's it.
I think so.
So, Sunday, Amy Poor and her company, A Poor Girl Paints Needlepoint Design. Poor Girl Paints is the company name, and it's Needlepoint Design. Really, what fun talking to Amy. In relative short time from starting to needlepoint to now doing designs that are in great demand.
And 100 of them? More than 100?
Yeah.
Many hundreds?
Painting them on our kitchen table. Yeah, you'll want to hear about our kitchen table. And and we get to hear a little bit about her husband's hobby. And I almost said to her, hey, get him on. We want to talk to him about his hobby too. So
yeah, and sort of like the cross spouse hobby thing.
Yes.
Like you have to talk about how you balance all that.
Yes. And then how she got started in the hobby, how the husband was the catalyst. It's yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Big mistake on his part. Big mistake. All right. That's it for the midweek show. We'll be back Sunday with Amy Poor. Thanks for listening.
Take care.